Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Your Honor.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by managers.
Diddly dum.
Bah!
This is Dumpty Dum, the show with the reality docudrama that are centered in Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the freelance work who is Royfield Brown, and with me I have the vocation that is
Kerry Warbis,
and the board member who goes by the name of
Peter Fickling.
And this week's menage a trois, who put the pampas grass here, is you folks. This week's Dumpty Dum is from Helen from Rotherham, accompanied on percussion by one-year-old Nathan. Smashing, wonderful, beautiful Dumpty Dum from mother and son. Now, Kerry, if there is another mother and son combo, maybe it's a mother and daughter, maybe it's father and son, father and daughter, who knows what the combo is, and they'd like to send us in a Dumpty Dum, how can that be done?
You see, culture does happen in Rotherham. If you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum or leave us a plot prediction, then call us on 0203 031 3105. Leave us a message on SpeakPipe or send a text message starting with Dum to 077 862 00690. Thanks to our social media supremos, Cosmo for his podcast roundups, Mike Hatton for his character counts, Shambridge for her voices, and Lucy B. Freeman.
On this week's blockbusting episode, we hear views from Ambridge Pony Club in Ireland, Dusty, who's in Southwest London, Glyn, who's in Derbyshire, Jacqueline Berthaud, who's in Brittany, Matthew Weir, who's in Porto, Pat Brown, who's in Leeds, and Red Agnes, who's up north somewhere just outside of Manchester. We have a hot topic of the week, and it is who exactly would take up Steph's offer, seeing as Freddie and Lily are not interested. Hold on to your hats for that one, folks. But first, it's Amber's week. That was Ambridge.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. I'm Amber, and on This Week in Ambridge, Helen tries to convince Kirsty to just trust the police to do their job. Ah, yes, because we all know how affirmatively the police act when it comes to missing vulnerable people who no one is looking for. Gavin has handed himself into police to evilly conspire against poor, not guilty Philip, saintliest and most benevolent of men. That is, until you dare challenge him, in which case you're a sanctimonious cow and he is a nasty pasty. Mince and Lizzie are on the piss, and Russ is unhappy at their reaction to his potential new exhibition, The Edinburgh Woolen Mill on Tour. Mince offers to buy one of the Woolly Jump knitted installations for his home, but doesn't miss the opportunity to demolish arrogant Russ for his snobbery by flexing his own enormous art muscles. And that was the week in Ambridge.
Thank you for that, Amber. I must admit, I'm all at sea with this one, but Pete Fickling, wrote it, so we're going to discuss it. Who would take up Steph's offer, seeing as Freddie and Lily are not up for it? Pete Ficklin, over to you, sir.
Well, before we talk about Linda and Robert, who I think definitely would be up for it, let's just take a moment to think about Freddie. I mean, the lack of adventure. It's a bit disappointing. I genuinely was surprised that he wouldn't sort of be, you know, I was about to say going in with both feet, but that is probably very unlikely and very uncomfortable. But yeah, I mean, these offers don't grow on trees if you're not looking for them, I don't think. I mean, even with the internet, I mean, maybe I'm sort of showing my age here, but I mean, would you not have given it a go when you were that age?
I think maybe he would do that. But, you know, yeah. Steph is Vince's daughter. Perhaps that was the only thing stopping him.
Yeah, would nine-year-old me, how would I have dealt with one of my stepfather's relatives cracking on to me? That's the question. I don't, you know, I probably would have said yes, actually. I mean, I was a...
Nine-year-old?
I don't know. I mean, I was quite an adventurous kid. I'm not the coward I am now. I mean, now I would run a million miles. It would scare me. I was again, rigid. This is a very awkward conversation to have.
Peter, Freddie is older than nine. I just need to tell you that. I know he sounds like he's nine.
That's a whole other hot topic, isn't it? It's kind of like, you know, sort of the Freddie, the complicated soul, you know, one minute the innocent, next minute the wise old jailbird. I was having a little bit of a think about who might be into it. And it was immediately just like, who wouldn't I want to have sex with? So I was thinking like Pat would be, she'd be very, I bet poor Tony. It's like, not like that, Tony, from behind, no rougher, but, you know, for God's sake, man, put your back into it. You know, it would just, I think she would really love it. Lots of people to boss around, tell, you know, how they were doing it wrong, how they could be doing it better. Mm-hmm. I imagined Russ would make everyone hold mirrors up so that he could be in some kind of like, you know, Bruce Lee sort of, you know, he'd probably be wearing, you know, sort of crotchless yellow jumpsuit or something. I mean, who else? I could go on. Tom, just so that he could rather limply crack sausage jokes endlessly or something. I don't know, you know, because he's got such a weak sense of humour. I mean, who else is there?
Neil?
Neil, I think Neil is a one-woman man. And we were sort of, before we started, we were talking about, it's actually the people who you know are oversexed, I think, are probably sort of happily. I mean, is a threesome sometimes a sticking plaster to a sort of like a failing love life? Not always. I know some people do it very happily, but is it occasionally?
I have no experience on this matter at all. But
no.
But we were kind of speaking a little before this, weren't we, as you've just said, about the type of person who might sort of go, oh, actually, yes, or have been doing it all the time quite happily. And thinking about the village inhabitants, I don't think there is anyone amongst them who would be like that. Or will we be surprised?
Alan is the stuff. If he had a confessional box, he would be using the hell out of it. I mean, Alan, I think, is probably swinging like a, you know, an orangutan.
Yeah, I can see the Snells having pampas grass in their front garden.
I mean, again, like maybe Jolene and Kenton. Yes, Kent, there you go. I think Kenton, he would love to be sort of like, you know, slapping some guy on the bum while, you know, he's sort of servicing Jolene and sort of saying, well done, mate, in a slightly preposterously laddie way or something.
It definitely wouldn't be David and Ruth.
David does not have enough lead in his pencil for that. I would just like to correct myself. When I said, you know, Pat, I think that there are people who do it because it's, you know, they're of a like mind and they're lucky enough to have found someone who's of a like mind. Or it's one, you know, the cliche, one person has sort of pushed for it and the other person's going along to kind of facilitate someone else's wants. So you're either looking for someone who desperately wants it or a couple who'd be very easy in that. Mm. And I think, yeah, Linda and Robert, yes.
Yeah, Pat might be a dominatrix, as you were mentioning, couldn't she, perhaps?
Yeah, poor Tony. I mean, it's bad enough being married to her. Now we've had to imagine him having sex with her as well. That's just awful. Justin and Lillian, absolutely, 100%.
Oh, yes.
Matching tracksuits.
Yes.
But those Chippendale ones you can rip off from the ankles. So the two of them just walk into the bedroom, grab their ankles and poof, they're both naked in half a second.
That is the answer, isn't it? I'd forgotten all about their existence because they haven't been in it for a while. It's obvious.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
First off, we go to the EU, and it's sunny Portugal. It's Matthew Weir in Porto.
Greetings, all Dumpty Dummers, Roy Field and lovely co-hosts. It's Matthew here in northern Portugal. For me, there were two main takeaways from this last week in Ambridge. Firstly, all the infighting between the Rewilding Bunch. Phoebe may have branded the board at BL dinosaurs, but it was another, more familiar dinosaur, a Victosaurus Rex, that roared loudest. This time, he didn't use his tiny arms to post hate online, or throw his toys out of his wheelbarrow. That fell to Pip, whose bluff was brilliantly called by the fair brother. She had best cooperate, or else she might become the subject of a series of scathing one-star reviews on the recently purchased Borchester domain, Pip Advisor. Meanwhile, over at Lower Loxley, the meat mogul's daughter, Steph Casey, offered Freddy a free love freeway stroke four-way, or as it's known in Casa Casey, a menage abattoir.
Oy.
Surely Vince himself is a part of this too. May please the court, evidence includes mildly creepy comments about how Lily was as attractive as Elizabeth, picking out his daughter's wedding dress, his ability to calm Russ's artistic temper when it reached one of its three various boiling points, and perhaps most worrying of all, his cozying up to David over a pint and a slash. One usual impediment to this would be David's insistence that all fetish wear should be woolen, but luckily that falls within the remit of Vince's new textile artist buddy, Jacob Portland of Stoke. Could the wedding now become some hybrid of Eyes Wide Shut and the Wicker Man, with Freddie handling the decks, Steph, Liam, and whoever else frottaging wildly to a mashup of New Order's Bizarre Love Triangle and the Wurzels Drink Up by Cider, and Vince hanging from the barn beams in his knitted manside sparrowhawk suit. Think about it. By day, the man presides over warehouses full of swinging meat. Who's to say he stops when the clock strikes five? Stay safe, everyone. Ciao, gente, e obrigado.
This is why I encouraged Matthew Weir, sort of slightly bullied him, into ringing in. Isn't that...
He's immense.
Wow.
He's absolutely immense. I mean, wow. I'd say it every single time, but he's shamingly good.
Swinging meat, menage abattoir.
Yeah. Thanks, Roy Field, for putting that right next to our chat about the...
It just so is, and that all fetish wear should be woolen.
Oh. I was made to wear woolen swimming trunks at the sort of zenith of my puberty, and it's a scarring experience I've never got over. But anyway, that's a
Peter. Who made you do that? That's awful.
My grandmother made me wear my grandfather's knitted. She'd knitted them, and it was It was in early January as well. So my sort of little Peter was not impressed.
Where were you? In a swimming pool inside? Or
No. Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah. Crucial detail. Christchurch Beach.
Good grief. Everything about this is horrific.
Yeah, it's all easily explainable. My terrible personality is very easily explained. All I need to do is just take 5 minutes to tell you a few childhood stories and it all slots into place. Oh. But anyway, I'm distracting from the magnificent Matthew Weir.
Well, I just think we can't top it with comment, honestly, other than to just... It just stands alone, doesn't it?
Royfield, how do we gradually sort of retreat and just allow Matthew to absorb more and more of the show?
Yes.
Until eventually it's just 90 solid minutes of Matthew reading, very well scripted, but, you know, still slightly, with lightly touched and sort of elegant prose.
What we do is we ask him from Porto in northern Portugal, the city that gave us port. Oh, and also the name of the country. We go to Glyn, who I believe is up in Derbyshire.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Glyn here. I'm not on location this week. I've got a few things on at the moment, so there'll probably be a short break from me after this week. On the Archers, last week in my call, I criticised Helen for how she had dealt with Kirsty, and the esteemed hosts did not agree with me, but that's fair enough. This week, though, I give you Natasha, who, unlike Helen, did not try to shut Kirsty's behaviour down, but in a very matter-of-fact manner offered Kirsty support. And by the end of Thursday's episode, I think we could hear Kirsty becoming more rational about what she was doing and, to some extent, questioning it. And... therefore, I think there's a definite gold star to Natasha, and I rest my case. Then we have to talk about Pip. Many of us will realise at some point in our career or business life that we need to move on, and I have no issue with that. But where it has a significant impact on others, I hope most of us would take that very seriously and do whatever we could to minimise the impact on them. I'm afraid Pip seemed insouciant about leaving the rewilding, and her suggestion to Ruth that they might take back the land was, in my view, appalling. If she's doing this because of Rex's post, that's very immature, and otherwise it's just plain bad behaviour. Well, that's all from me. Thank you very much for the podcast, and I hope to be back shortly with more location shots, etc. Bye.
Lovely Glyn. Yeah, the Natasha thing was great, wasn't it? She totally stepped up where Tom had said, I will help her, and then decided not to at the last minute. And I've got a bit of a comment about that and other quitters after this. But anyway, and then, yeah, Pip, of course, moving on is fine. It's how you do it, isn't it? And she, if this is revenge because of Rex's small post on social, it was all over social media, that he deleted anyway and was really regretful about, then what is she doing? I honestly don't know. I loved how stunned she was when Rex said, actually, can you ask your solicitor to draw up a new tenancy agreement, please, for this change of relationship? And she was totally floored by that.
Yeah, knocked backwards. Mm. It was. I was quite moved by Natasha's the whole scene with Natasha and Kirsty. Mm. And I agree with Glyn wholeheartedly that she was. You know, it was very affecting, and it was exactly the right thing to do, just to listen and let the person find their own way. And you know, and you can tell that the wind's kind of like, so, you know, all of Kirsty's bombast kind of blew away at that moment. She kind of deflated slightly. And then, yes, and as is always the case with the Archers, you know, everything balances out, don't you? You've got Natasha and Kirsty showing empathy and kindness, and then across the village, you've got Pip. And it was just, it's quite weird. I mean, I know we go on and on about how much we dislike her, but how can we not when this is what we're presented with? I mean, even Ruth, and again, you know, Ruth was nice this week. David was nice the week before. Natasha's shown a loving side. It's all been, you know, a bit upside down. But even Ruth was just like, you know, you're taking your ball home. You're being an idiot. This is, you know, she was quite, and it wasn't, it was immediate and without any sort of hesitation. No, so I know Ruth's not exactly the most affectionate mothers, but she didn't even pause.
She did say, didn't she, you're not even giving yourself enough chance or space to perhaps change your mind. She was being a bit pig-headed about it, wasn't she? But the thing about quitting, so Pip's quit the rewilding, and I noticed, like, Shula, obviously she's quitting, or perhaps quitting, her vocation of vicarship, and Tom quit the help that he'd offered to Kirsty. And I thought, what do these three people have in common?
They're all archers.
Yeah.
Evil, evil archers.
Why are they doing this when there's been a slight bump in the road?
Yeah, how are we supposed to keep on giving them a fresh chance when the scriptwriters keep on making them, you know, more and more obnoxious caricatures of themselves? I mean, and, you know, to some extent the reverse happens, doesn't it? Linda gets lovelier and lovelier. How can we love Jim more? I'll take it back slightly. Russ has been quite likeable recently. He's been very, very entertaining.
Yeah. I tell you what I'm looking forward to, though, which I really hope happens, is Peggy going nuts with Pip. I'm really hoping, because, you know, she's given this chance, she's given this money, and Pip's gone, no, thanks, I'd like to spend more time on other things, and I'm going to take that land back, probably. I really want Peggy to go postal with Pip.
Let us go on, folks, to our Pat Brown, who is also fiddling around with Dum-de-dum on the Twitter. So big ups to you, Pat Brown. I believe you're manning the decks for us today. Anyway, here is our Pat. She's in Leeds.
Hello, everyone in Dum-de-dum land. It's Pat from Leeds here. This week seems to be about doing good and being the goodest at doing good. Shula's been agonising about doing the right thing, and Freddie and Natasha have just got on with actually doing it. I do feel that people knock Shula a bit too much. I think she just has this terrible struggle all the time with herself. She must be quite unhappy most of the time. But I don't see her as a bad person. She's trying to do the right thing, bless her. Anyway, what I liked about Natasha was that she had the right idea. She saw what Kirsty wanted to do and she went along with it and backed her and didn't try to argue with her. And it reminded me of when Lizzie was trying to appeal Fed's sentence and she was going around trying to get another solicitor. And I've forgotten who advised who. I think it was Jill. And it might even be she advised Shula, but I can't remember. And she said, if that's what Lizzie wants, go with it. Help her. This is what, you know, okay, we might not agree it's the right thing, but go with it. And I think that's what Natasha has done. And in a way, that's helped Kirsty to actually question what she's doing and think about it more, which is what you want. The only other thing I wanted to say was that years ago, there was a homeless couple that stayed in, they squatted basically in a Brookfield cottage. It might even be where Pip lives now. And Phil and Jill fell out over it quite a lot because Jill was trying to help them and Phil wasn't very keen. He was a magistrate and I think one of them had come up before him or something. Anyway, it's not a new thing. So I'm going to go and plant some pampas grass. Bye-bye, everybody.
Go, Pat.
Does pampas grass grow well in Leeds? Pat, please let us know.
I think if that's your lifestyle choice, you'll put as, you know, you'll spend as much as you need on manure and fertiliser as you have to keep that pampas growing.
I wonder if it's ever come up on Gardener's Question Time on Radio 4, how to cultivate the pampas. Yeah, the being good thing, Shula agonising, Freddie and Natasha, just doing it, just being good. You know, she has obviously got a point, our Pat, about Shula. She's just not really a very happy person, is she? She's always agonising about everything.
Yeah. It's when Lizzie threw her faith back in her face.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about why I find Shula's faith irritating, even though in real life I'm an atheist, but I miss singing in church. I used to go to church a lot when I was a kid. And there's things about this, the ceremony, the companionship, lovely mother-in-law, she goes every week. I'm jealous of that. Of all of the community that she has. And I am really quite positive about religion, but there's a certain type of believer who really rubs me up the wrong way. And I think Shula's one of them. Mm. I fully support people's lifestyle choices, taking drugs, doing whatever they want. I'm a little less forgiving of dealers. And I think I feel the same way about religion. The people who enjoy religion, fine. It's the people who are kind of pushing it. Maybe I'm a bit more.
Well,
one sec. Because I'm going to disagree with you massively here. I agree with your fundamental analysis about religion and people who are accepting and whatever. Shula's not a religion pusher. She's not. And the thing about the whole story of Shula and her coming to the good book, the Lord, the church, whatever, is that it's incredibly Christian. She's like a doubting Thomas. She has questioned her faith. People who are tub thumpers and are insufferable about religion never doubt their faith. Shula doubts it all the time. She's a Saul on the road to Damascus, in that she has these points where she's confronted by her weakness of faith. And then with her wanting to understand more what it is to be part of the Christian fellowship. I'm not a Christian either, but I can clearly see that within the story of Shula, he's somebody who's forever questioning. And Pat is onto something when that we are too hard on the woman, because we've all conveniently forgotten when Freddie came out of Clink, she really helped give him the confidence that he now has. Yeah. He didn't want to face anybody in the village. And she says, no, you're my nephew. And, you know, you can come and stop with me, because he couldn't be at home. And he got so much solace and strength from his auntie Shula.
We haven't forgotten it, because it was in the episodes this week, wasn't it? But that was.
But with the whole damning of Shula, and she is boring. Yeah. That we do forget that. And also, she's somebody who is, what's the expression, a do-gooder. And I've never really understood the reason why. And she might be a namby-pamby do-gooder. She's not an activist like Kirsty, who goes out there and rolls her sleeves up.
It's virtue signalling, Royfield.
Well,
yes, it is.
You know
that's,
what?
That's the problem. Like,
but taking in her nephew wasn't, and trying to help Daryl.
Her nephew, though.
Yeah.
But Daryl, you know, when she tried to help Daryl, she was doing that out of the goodness of her heart. She wasn't doing it from a place where she was trying to get the applause from the village. She actually wasn't. Now, did she do the right thing? Probably not, but she came from a really good place. And I just think that I completely agree with Pat in that we have too much of a go. And as I said, as I was about to say, I've never understood the reason why calling somebody a do-gooder is a bad thing, because I'd rather be known as a do-gooder and fail as opposed to somebody who doesn't give a crap.
There's the literal meaning, and then there's the what you're trying to say. When people say you're a do-gooder, they don't mean, oh, you know, for shame you're doing good. They mean, oh, we know all about it, don't we? You couldn't spend 30 seconds in Shula's time without hearing about Jesus and her love for him. I mean,
I disagree.
Also, Shula herself said, it all sounded so sanctimonious when I rethought what I was saying to Lizzie. And even Kerry Davis on Twitter, someone said, oh, I bet you enjoyed writing that line, didn't you? And he just replied with a smiley face emoji. So he knows. He's writing it.
I don't disagree with Pat. Can we make that very clear? Before you know, and I'll say it, I might say it a few more times, so it's more difficult for Roy Field to get rid of it. I 100% agree with Pat. We are too harsh on Shula, but the criticism is to some extent fair. Maybe we're just a bit too keen to express it.
Well, anyway, let us move on. Let us move on. And from Pat Brown in Leeds, we go over to the Emerald Isle. It's Ambridge Pony Club.
Greetings, Royfield, Kerry, Peter, Philippa, and anyone else who's helping out this week. Just calling in to say how terribly sorry I am that the Zoom call was interrupted in the way it was, and to hope that you are all okay. I had young ears listening, so I'm afraid I had to bail pretty quickly and didn't hear what happened, but I'm just so sad that that happened. Ben was so generous with his time, and he was absolutely delightful up to that point, and I really appreciate all that Royfield's doing to bring a little entertainment and enjoyment into the lives of those of us who are shielding, like myself. He's been absolutely amazing throughout this whole COVID thing, and we really appreciate everything you do. And it's so unfair when these disgusting people decide to interrupt these calls. I've no idea why anybody would do such a thing. It's absolutely disgusting. And just to say, I hope you are all okay, and thanks very much for everything that you do. Also calling in, my suspicions that Alistair is an absolutely crap vet confirmed. I could not believe where he and Shula were having a laugh over, oh, Banjo's okay now. Gosh, it wasn't a bad back. It was gastric ulcers after all. I mean, bit of a misdiagnosis. You're going to be a bit upset, you know, if your GP can't decide whether to get out the Tiger Balm and send you to a physiotherapist or get out a bottle of Gaviscon. Bit of a major difference there. Gastric ulceration, bad back. I mean, you'd have only had to put the horse through an incredibly dangerous and expensive surgery if it was the kissing spine. So thank God for some reason he did put it on a bit of Gastroguard instead. That village needs a new vet. Don't think they should really bring back Anisha, but that's another story. So anyway, just hoping that you're all safe, well and happy out there. And again, thanks, Royfield, for everything you do. And we really do appreciate it. And hope you're all right.
Yes.
Kerry, can we just get? We just need to record the 30 seconds of us saying we want just a special of Ambridge Pony Club talking specifically about Alistair and all of the bad vets and all of the bad animal husbandry decisions that go on.
Yes.
You know, is Ruby exercised enough? You know, it's a part of the show that obviously is part of the original remit, but as casual listeners, I mean, we just take it as read. The archers have said this is how we should, you know, you should treat horses. So us idiots just think, oh yeah, that's it. You know, is our herbal lays a good thing? Are polytunnels good or bad for the environment? All of this stuff, I just, you know, I just take as delivered.
Yeah, I must admit, I didn't even notice any reference to gastric ulcers or Banjo in the episodes last week. I heard that Alistair scraping tartar off some teeth, and I thought at first it was Shula's teeth he was dealing with, and then
it would explain the failed relationship, wouldn't it?
Possibly, yeah. but it seemed to be that a horse was present, so I presume it was the horse who had the tartar. But I can't remember about the gastric ulcers.
But yeah, I mean, if that is actually very, very badly incorrect, I don't know why that would be.
Yeah, and I like the way that Ambridge Pony Club, sorry, I can't call her Jen. It feels weird. She's just in my head, Ambridge Pony Club. But when Jen was saying that, she says you can hear there's a sort of tigerish passion in her voice. Yeah. She's really quite angry.
It's like so fundamental, this error.
Yeah, it's not, oh, it's God. Sort of, yeah. It's like, you know, maybe the kids have missed a meal because she's sort of just trying to give herself 10 minutes to calm down so she can make the call just to sort of, you know, really give a sort of a calmer and less sweary version of her thoughts on the monster that is Alistair Lloyd.
Yes, that village needs a new vet. But how will that happen, if ever? Will he really majorly mess up?
And I guess it has sort of happened, doesn't it? Because Jakob, we're forgetting about Jakob, aren't we?
Oh, Jakob, God, yeah. Oh, Jakob, where's he?
I like him. Yeah.
Yeah, I liked him too.
No human being in the world is more different to me than Jakob, and I like him for it. He's very sort of, I just like how matter of fact he is, how sort of unashamed, you know, he's I like Jakob a lot, but maybe for APC's sake and for our sake, maybe Alistair could sort of resign in shame because he sort of, I don't know, slathers some dying cow in tiger balm.
Yeah, he thinks and a cow is a horse or something.
Exactly, yeah. Just, it all goes absolutely pear-shaped.
Jen, thank you for your call regarding what happened on Friday. And I did send out a message on Twitter. I believe they called a tweet. I sent out a tweet. And thanking everybody who'd emailed me, DM'd me, messaged me on Facebook. There was about 30 or so direct messages from listeners asking if I was all right and what a terrible, you know, beastly thing that people did. And it was coordinated and it forced me to do a little bit of thinking. So a bit of housekeeping first. On Twitter, what I do is on the run-up to a Zoom show, I send out links via DM to dum-de-dummers, to people who I've actually have DM'd me before or DM'd dum-de-dum before. Now, in future, all I'm going to do is just DM the links to people who have the little flag icon, so the little flag of Nepal or the international sign of bunting next to the name. So that's a little bit of security. In effect, it was going to act as a little blue-checked, verified sign that you really are a proper dum-de-dummer. I don't believe that the leak came from there, but you never know. So if ever you needed a push in a prod, if you listen to dum-de-dum, to put the international sign of bunting on your name, this is the time to do it.
I think we should change it to pampas grass. Is there a pampas grass icon?
Well, I'm not doing that. Peter, let me just do this bit, right? Because I've been meaning to say this for quite some time. Well, I mean, it's just, I don't do the jokes afterwards, mate. I just wanted to get rid of this and get back with the show. So that is that. Then what I did do, and this is possibly where the leak did come from, there is a forum called Mustardland, which is one of the oldest Archers forums. I did post the details there. It's something which I have done on occasion before, but I think it was Richard from Krakow, and there was somebody else basically did email me to say that what a lot of people do who try to Zoom bomb is to scrape websites looking for Zoom links. So it's possible and maybe probable that's where the leak actually came from. So it wasn't from anybody on Mustard Land. So I'm not impugning anybody on Mustard Land. It's an old and venerable Archers forum. But it's possible that even though you need to log on to post, I don't think you need to log on to view. I don't think, but I'm not quite sure, to be honest with you. So that's that. I will continue to do the Facebook event stuff where I post the links, but even there, security can be tightened up. I'll make sure that those posts are not viewable to the public and only to people who are on Facebook. And the invites actually go out just to dum-de-dummers and to people who are interested in the Archers. So for people that have asked, and I know a lot of people who've heard that what happened, these weren't fans of the Archers at all. So, and these were people who just wanted to Zoom bomb and then saw there was a black guy who was running the thing and then started chanting the N-word and were sufficiently coordinated so that they waited about 6 minutes in before then all hell letting loose, and then went from one to the other disrupting things, and were that smart that whilst I was still accepting new people into the group, one of them who I'd ejected managed to log back in and call himself Ben Norris. And of course, we're interviewing Ben Norris. And because I'm admitting real listeners into the group, I thought that maybe Ben had lost his internet connection, had logged back on and stuff. So nefarious they were, bastards they definitely are, and utter losers they most definitely are as well. But it happened. To everybody that says they were horrified about the language that was used and stuff and the racial abuse, being totally honest, and I did say this before all things kicked off, I wasn't really having the best of days for no other reason than I just wasn't. And to have that at that point, at the end of the show, I did actually get a little bit teary when I switched it off. And when I told my old mum and my brother, and my mum said she did actually log on to the recording, but it was afterwards. And she says, I would have had him with me handbag, son. No one's going to talk to us like that way. And we had a proper little laugh. And the truth of the matter is, if you are black and you live in a society where you are in the minority, all of us have had some level of racial abuse. Most of it's actually unwitting. Most of it is incredibly subtle. And when you get to the age of 52, it's very few people that call you a nigger to your face and then repeatedly call you a stupid fucking nigger. It doesn't really happen. The last time that I had that level of abuse, well, other than last year when it happened on a Zoom call, was literally in the playground when I was about seven, when you called a nignog and you looked like a pile of poo type of thing. And even then, I was sufficiently robust because of the parents that I had to go sticks and stones, my bones, but words will never hurt me type of thing. I don't know why this got to me on Friday, but trust me when I say to everybody, all of your letters of support and of shock and horror that this thing goes on, have really given me a real pickup. So what I did at the end of the show, after getting all a bit kind of weepy, because I just think, bloody hell, I'm just trying to do a show and an interview about the Archers. You know, why people got it in for me? They didn't have it in for me personally, but they are vile losers. So I went for a walk to the local park, had an ice cream, spoke to my mum, my brother and some friends, and I felt a whole lot better. But definitely the messages from everybody who's connected to our wonderful community definitely helped pick me up. It wasn't a personal attack. It was just people who are utterly vile racists. And on the last point I would say is that social media has a lot to answer for in terms of people feeling that they have the impunity to slag off, be vicious and just utterly vile to their fellow brethren. And it's something which I'm sure none of those four or five people who Zoom bombed the call would actually say to my face. But there is something about social media and at the margins of it, not all of it, the toxicity that it does actually breed, that people feel emboldened to do this. So if you're right thinking, wherever you can, try and help to snuff out this type of bullshit. Basically, civility is all, as far as I'm concerned. And just it does link on to something which I had to post. And this was before Friday Zoom bomb, actually on Facebook, where I very clearly said, because the Facebook group is doing so well in terms of the amount of people that are there and who are messaging. But we've got to keep the discourse civil. We're talking about fundamentally about a show which is not real. You know, as much as we say it's a docudrama, Ambridge does not exist. We can have a little bit of a go about the characters, but regarding other dum-de-dummers, we're incredibly civil. And some of the messages were starting to veer off that, and people start to have a go at each other. Utterly no. And I said this before Friday. I deleted a couple of messages. We're going to keep it incredibly civil. And let's remember that the Commons, the central ground of where we are as citizens, of whether it's Britain, America, Canada, New Zealand, wherever, is an important
place to be, that we accept people for who they are, for what they are, and we don't throw insults, let alone racial epithets, at each other. And whenever we do see that people do that, we stamp on it, full stop. All right, there you go. Ambridge Pony Club, thank you for that. Now we're going over to Jacqueline Berto.
Can we please stop a minute, Royfield? Is that okay? It's just like, yeah, yeah, that's hugely, you know, just to veer into a call after that massive, massive, massive speech. Is that okay?
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting that. No. Especially because you said before we started recording, you didn't really want to cover it. So I'm just...
No, I was...
That was huge.
The thing was, not that I didn't want to cover it. I said there was a call. Jenny Cawley had mentioned it. And I suppose it just triggered me. I don't think that I wear this whole kind of race thing on my shoulders. I don't think that I do. I don't even think, you know, it's not the most important thing about me. I'm a bloody 5'7" Brummy bloke who thinks I'm totally unemployable, yada, yada, yada. I'm English, British, and I'm black, and I'm Jamaican. The that stuff doesn't come first. But you just realise every now and then that people see you as other and different and as not equal. And I forget this. You know, I forget this, you know, and I was reminded in a very direct way on, you know.
Yeah.
Friday.
I mean, Royfield, this can be on mic if you want it to, but I mean, I felt a bit victimised in that I feel that was my job to abuse you on air, and that was taken away from me. And, you know, and that's sort of I was rendered obsolete in my usefulness as a someone who sort of lambasts you and belittles you in public.
Well, yes, mate, yeah, I know. And the thing is, there was also Bernadette Hawkes was watching that. And I don't really know Bernadette. We've spoken once or twice directly. But, you know, it's just enough of this. Just enough of this shit, right? And it's not by accident that the people feel emboldened to say this, that we have right-wing extremism and we have, you know, the country, you know, scared about immigrants and people who are different. And then these idiots feel emboldened. It's these things actually are linked. And I have been online from 1998, doing things, ran an internet company, etc. I never had the amount of vitriol and abuse that I've had all that time until the last 2 or 3 years.
Mm.
You know, the temperature of discourse is completely and utterly changing. Not for everybody, but we've got to be careful that we've got to recognise it where it is and then stamp it out at the fringes, because it's seeping from the fringes into it is acceptable to go and do this type of thing. I'm not on about Zoom bombing. That's a completely and different malevolent kind of thing. I'm just going to ruin other people's fun. But they saw I was black. And decided to just call me the N-word repeatedly. I booted them out, then they came back and then called me a stupid fucking nigger. You know, and it's just like...
Yeah, they had American accents, didn't they? Are you able to report it in any way? Have you captured any IP things? Or can Zoom see who entered Zoom?
Because funnily enough,
my main thing would be, you know... It was fucking awful. I was, sorry for swearing, I was there and I felt horrendous. So goodness only knows how you felt. But my main thing is there a way to trace these individuals so that you can report them properly and maybe, you know, then their employer can know that they do this sort of stuff?
As you know. Far as I know, no. And Matthew Weir sent me a lovely message saying exactly the same thing. But funny enough, Richard from Cracker, who was... part of the Zoom call, he had actually arranged to speak to me at 12 o'clock Californian time because he wants to talk to me about, and he said go to Zoom anyway and maybe they'll be able to log IP addresses.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
people have been so lovely, not only, you know, arms around me, give me virtual hugs, but also with good practical advice. Since the initial Zoom bombing back last May, I don't know how many of these Zooms that I've done
Bearing in mind, I do them for other podcasts as well. But let's say that I've done 40. So you could take a view and say, well, if you've done 40 of these things in 9 months and you've had 3 Zoom bombs and then 2 bots of racist abuse, oh, well, that's par for the course. But no, right? We kind of have to sort this out for no other reason than, you know, people had gathered. And as Jennifer said, she was there with her kids. There were 2 or 3 couples there and stuff who were just, you know, wanting a nice, pleasant Friday, cup of tea, cup of cocoa, have a little bit of nice Archer's chat, and then all hell just like broke loose. I will up the security. Thank you, everybody, for all of your kind words and advice as to how this can be done. So sorry for the monologue / mini rant / plea to our better angels, folks. But now from that, we go to Jacqueline Berthaud, one of the OG, one of the original dum-de-dummers from Brittany in France.
Bonjour, c'est Jacqueline Berthaud de Saint-Gouin en Bretagne. I really love so much about the last week in Ambridge, especially as I've had a whole day last week to get up to date with my podcast listening. I feel as though I'm really on the ball this week. Now, I'm sure lots of other cleverer colorinerers will have lots to say about the rewilding, threesomes and Shula, but I want to talk about Pip. Now, for me, she's been confirmed as a self-righteous, immature, whining little cow. I feel quite sorry for a car-thieving daughter. But Ruth, who I'm not normally a fan of, did manage to point out to her that she was, what was the expression, taking her ball home, which is a very immature thing to do. And why would Pip want to pull the rug out from under the feet of the rewilders? She's saying it isn't anything to do with the battle that's going on between her and the Fairbrother, but that's what it is. But I didn't think that she'd taken any notice of Ruth, which she did, not acknowledging Ruth, saying that she had to would have to refer it back to the family. She is so up her own bottom, that woman, a girl, because she's not mature enough to be called a woman. Anyway, she did take a bit of notice of Ruth, which I was pleased to note in the end. Well, that's all me rambling on. Au revoir pour maintenant.
Lovely, lovely, lovely to hear from you, Jacqueline Berthaud. I remember hearing you when I used to listen to Dumpty Dum many, many moons ago, so I know you're an OG. Pip is a self-righteous cow with her car-thieving daughter. That was a funny one, wasn't it, where they were talking about Rosie. Yeah, she keeps stealing stuff at the nursery, and Ruth just went, oh, that reminds me of you too, or something. It was like, oh, yeah, that's maybe not the right response to. I mean, she's only little, I know, kids do stuff, but that was funny to hear that thieving is fine.
Jacqueline was quite, and rightfully critical of Pip, but then she said that she thought Pip had learned her lesson from Ruth, and that wasn't what I took away from it at all, because when she went to speak to Rex, wasn't she still sort of holding various decisions above him? And yes, she agreed to go and speak to her solicitor, but I don't think it was all completely tied up, was it? Wasn't there a little bit of wriggle room for her? And she was sort of saying, oh, I haven't made my mind up.
That was as far as it got, really, yes, saying, yeah, I haven't quite decided. But then the rug was pulled from under her, kind of.
Yeah,
thing.
I thought Rex dealt with her very neatly.
Yeah.
And I think that she probably will cave. But I guess what I'm saying is I didn't get the impression that she'd listened to Ruth. I felt it was as much that she didn't have the courage to basically continue to be unpleasant in the face of a very reasonable and polite Rex.
Exactly. Rex was so polite. He was like, just would like to know, is Oakey Bank staying in the project? It is a key corridor kind of thing. And she went, you know, I've invested a lot into this.
Yeah.
Got really on her high horse immediately.
She invested a lot so that she could get a lot out of it, as we all do, you know, with these things. Her involvement was entirely selfish. You know, the brokering of the land was entirely for her own good. But you 2 weeks ago, you were very complimentary, Kerry, about Rex just apologising to David and saying, yeah, I got it wrong. I did, you know, it was my mistake. Was that who you were? But anyway, you were very complimentary about just being honest, admitting you made a mistake, and I felt the same thing. Phoebe was like, oh, let's just let
who was it who took the clanking beers of a apology round to someone's house.
Oh, that was Josh.
Yeah, that's who I was talking about.
Yeah, yeah. But the same thing applies. That kind of rather than doing what Phoebe suggested, which is just which is exactly what I would do, which is just to kind of like hope it all just blows over and be a bit of a coward. No. Mm-hmm. Like Josh, he went straight round, and maybe he's paying it forwards. Josh went round to him, he's gone round to Pip and said, look, this is the situation, this is my concern, this is why I'm worried, and then what's in and left her, you know, squirming on the hook.
Yeah, I think genuine apologies don't happen enough. She is up her own arse. Oh, you said bottom, sorry, Jacqueline.
Yeah.
What's the French for arse? I don't know.
Well, if she's up her own arse, then she doesn't need to do one of these ménage à trois that's, you know, all the rage in the village, because she can sort of like, she's like one of those slugs, make love to herself. So appropriate.
Is that the slug with the penis on its head? I literally read about that today.
I think slugs can get it all done on their own, can't they? And then if they want to, they can, you know, find a partner.
Well, we can all get it done on our own, can't we?
Well, not with an end product.
I suppose no. Sorry.
No. Although, breaking news.
It depends what you think.
There's an end product.
Anyway. just because I know we have some good Christian folk listening to this. So I'm just going to slightly reverse out of
a
conversation. Yes, you heard me. I'm slightly reversing out of this. Jacqueline Berto, thank you for that.
Hello, dumplings. It's Red Agnes here. Sorry I've not been in touch for a long while. Just got a little bit of any other business. I put you on my list after going to the vet with the cat, reading the meters, and booking my breast and cervical screening cancer test. Not that you needed to know that, but I'll just share that with you anyway. Not been in touch for a while, but I was getting a little bit wound up a couple of weeks ago when you were dissing Rich Tea Biscuits. That is bang out of order. Mr. and Mrs. Red Agnes are very partial to a packet of party rings. Well, actually, two packets of party rings, one each. Bit of catnip for us. And who has a chunky Kit Kat lying around? We've just had builders in, and you've raised our expectations hugely. The most I could manage was a couple of ginger biscuits, because we try not to have them in the house. The only other any other business I just wanted to put in was a couple of weeks ago, Brian was a complete arse to Kirsty, and I thought that was bang out of order again. But then again, Kirsty was being a complete arse all by herself the other day, so they probably deserve each other. And in terms of which characters we like and don't like, they've got to be up for a laugh, haven't they? And they've got to laugh at themselves and have a bit of fun. And Sheila was going on about being humourless and having a bit of fun, and she couldn't have fun if her life depended on it. Mm-hmm. And as for God, he's welcome to her. Hope that's okay. See you all soon, and thank you for being there. Bye-bye.
Hey, Red Agnes, welcome back. I know, you know, we all have lists of tasks, don't we? And things like slide down to the lower priorities. So it's really, really great to hear from you. Rich tea biscuits are revolting. Ginger nuts for builders, fair enough. I would give ginger nuts to builders as well rather than eat them myself. So, yeah, God is welcome to Shula. We agree. Red Agnes, your point about Shula and she wouldn't know fun if it slapped her in the face. I had written down on my notes for today about what would Shula consider to be fun. And in my mind, it would be things like, you know, having put the wrong saddle on a horse or wearing a bright cardigan by accident. How we laughed. I don't know. I can't think of the last time I heard Shula laughing about or at something.
Oh, everyone's seen the hilarious picture of Daniel doing Movember, you know, or Daniel this, Daniel that, or, you know, Christmas jumpers, all of the borrowed or sort of learnt humour.
Hello, it's Dusty Substances here, the wrong sort of listener. First time for a while, so happy new year to everyone from me. I've just listened to Monday's episode and I'm really cheered up because two very positive things have happened. First of all, Pip is going to pull out of the rewilding. And so I would like rewilding now to be an unmitigated success and to really piss Pip off. I'd be absolutely thrilled about that. The other thing is that I think we're now being led to believe that Steph might have been Freddie's conquest at the Isle of Wight Festival. And That's really going to be awkward now, isn't it? So I can't wait for all of that. Anyway, that's it. Loved you all and speak soon. Bye.
Ooh, yes. Lovely, lovely to hear you, Dusty Substances.
I did wonder about that.
Yes, of course, because, you know, she did say, I've seen you before, and they had the conversation, didn't they, about you were so kind, you walked us to the toilets with a torch. What she hasn't mentioned is that they might have had an experience together. And he did keep saying, oh, it was all a blur, didn't he? The festival. Mm. Ooh.
And then Lily said, is she Vince in a dress? And he agreed and then backed out of it.
Mm.
I'm rejecting wildly, but I sort of get the impression that Steph is a very pretty, sort of gregarious, bubbly sort of person. So I think Freddie would have done very well to have her sort of on the way to the tent.
Yeah, throwing up in front of the Kaiser Chiefs. Or was that was his friend, wasn't it, actually?
With his pussy weeping ear from having his, having it pierced.
But, it was an eyebrow, Peter, actually. He was much more racy.
Sorry. I'm going a bit George Michael there. But, she's very well written. The actress makes her a lot of fun.
I totally agree as well, Dusty, about Pip pulling out makes us long for it to be a massive success so that she's really cheesed off.
So Phoebe, it was wonderful hearing her skewer Justin, but then also she was such a mini Brian, wasn't she? But maybe this is sort of sexism because she's basically being Brian, but we don't forgive her. We don't forgive her as easily or as instantly.
I'm all for strong women in the boardroom and so on.
Right.
I think one of the things about why that sounded a bit odd was because she sounds about 12. When we forget that she's been to university and she has got some gumption, hopefully.
Sort of feel that metaphorically there's a zigzag of badly put on her mum's lipstick across her face and she's flopping around in a kind of pair of high heels that are five sizes too big.
Yeah, she's wearing those sort of like jewellery things that you used to get in the shop for clip-ons, about 2 quid behind the plastic thing. I think it was to do with that. She sounded so, so very immature when saying those lines.
Yeah,
I was all for what she was saying. It was great, wasn't it?
It was weird to have two such strong emotions happening at exactly the same. Like, go on, girl, get in there. And at the same time, oh, for God's sake, you're awful.
Yeah, I did love Brian's. I've got 3 points to tell you. I'm not a dinosaur. That was the first one. I called the meeting, so I decide who attends.
And I've got a lot to offer. And then he said, there's 4 things, wasn't it? Because then he said rather ominously at the end, I think I've come in just, I've got involved just in the nick of time.
Ooh. Yeah.
So maybe rewilding is now is now very much in Brian's purview.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. Wow, I used the word purview rather than necessarily there.
Lovely. Yeah. Peter Purview.
Auntie Kerry, do we have any emails?
Ooh, you surprised me again because I didn't know that was the last person calling.
You know what? I'll tell you what, because I did just do a handbrake turn. So whilst you find them, I will do that link again.
I mean, there's only one, but, it's not hard to find it. Yeah.
I'll do the link anyway. So there you go, folks. There were the caller inners. We ended up with Dusty, the OG. Now it's Hemales with an H. Auntie Kerry Warburton, do we have any Hemales?
We do. We have the one email, which is from Marjorie from Sussex. What a lovely county that is. So she says, she goes straight in with, Royfield, can you please stop asking poor Philippa to read out emails from people saying how much they particularly like the other co-hosts? Are you doing this deliberately? yes, poor Philippa.
I thought the same thing.
Yeah, a bit awkward. Secondly, is it just me or is The Archers the most exciting it's been for years? So many plot lines, so many brilliant scenes and acting, and great little snippets of humour too. Best line from this week was Nokasha, what's your dad got on his bucket list? And then Tom saying, knowing dad, probably a new bucket. Yes, that was a corker. Or is The Archers actually as boring as ever, but it's just that nothing else is happening in our lives?
Oh, that's dark.
So it's all relative. Finally, just a thought, but if we take out the class issue, aren't Vince and Nigel pretty similar characters? Lizzie sort of said this when she said that Vince makes her laugh like Nigel used to. Oh, take care, Marjorie.
Did she say that?
Didn't hear that. I mean, she definitely said she said he makes me laugh. I don't think she said like Nigel.
Yeah.
But anything that's making Lizzie laugh, that's a good thing, isn't it?
I'm going to say it again. I love Vince so much. I get quite cross when I see people criticising him on Twitter.
There you go, folks. There are your emails, or email, singular. If you'd like to send us an email, quite simply go on to dumdydum.com and go to contact us. Write us an electronic missive, which we will then read out in the next episode.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Now it's a social media roundup, and it's from the Upper Lower East West Side.
Greetings, Dumpty Dummers. This is Witherspoon and Angus Haggis with the social media roundup. Or as Tom Hanks would say in his new movie, I bring you the news of the world. First, the weather report. Last weekend, England was excited by a bit of the white stuff. Sean Coleman and Teresa Nahashki shared photos of snow-covered houses, and our Glynn posted pics of snow-covered fields and hills. Happy winter, everyone. A very busy week in Ambridge and on Facebook began with Pip being Pip. I invited all to vent their frustrations. There were many comments, with hardly a one in support of her. Rob's Shosh wrote, I think this episode demonstrated Pip's lack of character and integrity. Laura Jackson noted, if nothing else, Pip demonstrated that she couldn't give a shit about the rewilding project. She is truly a horrible person. Tommy Krausen pointed out that Pip was acting like a spoiled child, much like her own daughter. And Drew Hamilton represented those who hadn't yet listened to the episode, but were still happy to pile on Pip at any opportunity. While Pip was annoying us, we were introduced to Vince's daughter, Stephanie, or Steph, with a PH or F. She gave hints of being a naughty troublemaker as Mozart's Queen of the Night was playing in the background while she flirted with Freddie. Darcy Jorgensen warns him to beware of her. Our Dusty Substances postulated that Steph and Freddie may have had a dalliance on the Isle of Wight, but that young Partridor was too intoxicated to remember. However, later in the week, we learned that wasn't the case, as a shocked Freddie was invited by Steph to take a walk on the wild side. Pete Ranson pointed out that he called it before the rest of us found out, musing whether Steph was part of the West Midlands swinger scene. I put on my psychiatrist hat and asked, does wanting to have sex with the son or daughter of the woman your father is having sex with feel a little competitive? Freudian? Incestuous? Richard Beveridge replied, all of the above. On Tuesday, all I had to do was put up a post about Tom for another avalanche of responses to appear. Adrienne DC wondered whether he would start seeing Kirsty behind Natasha's back. Melly McMerriweather thought he was both condescending and patronizing. Stephen Bowden found Tom to be as solipsistic as his sister Helen. I had to look that word up. Fiona Crawford did give Tom some credit for suggesting he and Natasha give his father a bucket for his birthday. Tom had another bad day on Thursday, but as he was getting ready to abandon Kirsty again, Natasha stepped into the breach and accompanied Kirsty without judgment. This pleasantly surprised some people, such as Lillian McCarthy and Helen Salim, who said that she was starting to become a fan. I pointed out that Natasha had demonstrated empathy and kindness in previous instances as well. Shula once again came in for a lot of criticism. Early in the week, Wendy Rowcroft suggested she take a crash course in boundaries and that she should think longer before she speaks. Michael Wheelock thought Shula should give up breathing for Lent. That's a bit harsh, Mike. Later in the week, though, Freddie forgave Shula and asked her mom to do so, and I asked if we could as well. Lillian McCarthy said she could, and on Saturday, Marion Barton posted that she thought Shula did the right thing in visiting Philip. Many opinions from the many Dumpty Dummers. Finally, a post about the Battle of the Dinosaurs, Brian versus Justin. Most supported Brian and thought he would be helpful to Phoebe. Jillian Holmes said Brian might be a dinosaur, but he's our dinosaur, bless him. One dispatch from our friends at the Academic Archers, Christine Armstrong, raised a good point for discussion. She thought the scriptwriters were demonizing the homeless for repeatedly having Kirsty's friends warn her that what she was doing was dangerous. This led to many responses, mostly in agreement with Christine. Please check them out on their Facebook page. Finally, I should note that the now not-so-new Dumpty Dum Facebook group is up to 1,100 members. We invite everyone from our community to join. And as Royfield said, remember, when you do post, play nicely with others and be kind. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for that, Mr. Spoon. Peter, it's your time, sir, and I know you are going to shine. I did not mean for that to rhyme at all. Purely a slip. Anyway, Peter, I'm backing off. The spotlight is yours, sir. Go for it.
Well, I tuned in last week and I thought the podcast in general, what would you say, Kerry, out of 10? I really enjoyed it. I'm going to give it a solid 9.
Yeah.
What's the one out of 10 that dropped it? Well, I think we all know it's Quentin's poor showing on Tweet of the Week. He did this weird kind of Sister Wendy impersonation where he was kind of taking us around some kind of imaginary art gallery talking about a bunch of pictures on tweets for a couple of minutes. That was I think retirement is taking the edge off the once sort of cutting wit of this former sort of BBC Leviathan. And anyway, Quentin, you can do better. So what I've got is I've taken the liberty, like Philippa has, I've slightly tweaked the format. We've got gold, silver and bronze. But if you two will be show some good manners, pay attention, and show some appreciation for all three of the tweets, there is a bonus tweet from A Bit Buddish I'm willing to throw in. You don't have to laugh. Just be decent and honest, right?
No pressure.
No, exactly. As I said, all I want is an honest and polite response rather than what I normally get. Because the one thing Philippa and Quentin do get is good manners. So in bronze position, as is traditional, Andrew Davidson at Andy Make the Tea says, "Oh, that old saving your marriage by helping your husband's ex-fiancé to find some victims of modern slavery cliché never gets old, does it?"
Yes, that is good.
Yeah, okay, right. So onwards and upwards. A Bit Buddish. You might be happening. So Purple Pumpkin at Purple Pumpkin 63. You can see I'm leaning on all the old favourites here, Carrie. Not taking any chances.
No shame in that.
I'm actually really glad someone in Ambridge is getting their end away in an unconventional, unmarried, non-straight way, even if it is only Steph Minstotir Casey.
Steph what?
Minstotir, like Scandinavia, Svensson or no, Minstotir.
Didn't understand that. Sorry.
Okay, sorry, Vince. Sorry. I mean, sorry, A Bit Buddish. Maybe next week. Maybe in another couple of weeks. All right. But thank you. You were nice, Kerry. You weren't as mean as you normally are. So that's good.
Oh, Michael's silent. I'm saying something.
Kerry, I'm glad you said you didn't understand that, because if you didn't, I most definitely was never going to understand that.
Well, at least we know Roy Field hasn't succumbed to his medication. He's still with us. That's good. Right. Yeah. Here we are. John Porter at Pie in a Pint. "Surely you can't just abandon a rewilding project. That would mean all the rewilded areas would simply be left alone and oh."
Yes. Love it. Makes sense.
Very clever.
I can remember seeing that one. Great.
There you go. And then someone very clever and witty said afterwards, "You'd have nests of pterodactyls popping up in no time."
Well, hey, dinosaur reference. Yeah. Love it.
Do you feel you deserve the Vince Buddish one? Or is that...
Well, I think the world deserves it. Yeah.
So A Bit Buddish has said, "I'm Buddish, at I'm Buddish. Elephant in the room, blimey, how much rewilding is too much?"
Well done.
Yeah.
Nope.
No, well, that was good. I thought that was quite good.
Oh, sorry.
I mean, I do get how it must have been timely to the tweet along, but anyway, you know, I'm sorry. I've let everyone down. I came in with all that bombast. This is what you two do to me. And if I listen next week and Philippa is not doing tweets, then that's it for me. I'm done. So
listen, I will happily pick the tweets, but you two are not laughing people.
But I do at least give an honest bit of feedback afterwards.
I think you need to pop your knitted trunks on and have a word with yourself.
Oh, it's just Roy Fields there in the background, like a dying star, just sucking in matter. You're, you know, because you're such a gregarious and laughing person, when you don't laugh, it's agonising. Anyway, brilliant. Tweet of the week.
Woohoo!
Folks, I tell you what you can do. Why don't you go to dondrum.com when this episode is posted, write a comment about Peter's excellent choices of tweets of the week. There's also other things you can do. You can also go to the shop, you can buy some stuff, but more importantly than that, you can join us on Traktor, the social network for fans of the Archers. Sign up, hit the register link over there on the top right, and tell us when you started listening, and it pins you to the map. The whole point is that then, when the coronas are over, when the covids are done, we've all got our jabs and the world goes back to normal, you can go out and chill out and walk your dogs with other fans of the Archers and with Dumbudum. And we have over 1,000 people have signed up throughout planet Earth. Very obviously, we're top heavy in Britain, loads of us in America, quite a few in Australia. And there is more than just a smidgen of us in Canada, but other bits of the globe need filling in too. So if you're in Holland, we have 3 members in Holland, all geographically quite close to each other. Why don't you go on to dumdum.com, sign up for Traktor? But I tell you what you need to do. If you are saying to yourself, "I've already done that," you probably haven't done it to the best of your abilities. Upload a profile pic so we can see what you look like, a happy, smiley face of a dumdy-dummer. But as important as that, you can go back and edit your profile. If you've ever called in
why don't you give yourself the caller in or icon. If you've ever been to a Dum Dum Live or a meetup, etc., there are basically things you can do to pimp your profile. So please go off and do that and pimp your profile as much as you can and get it all ready for the post-corona world. Supporting this podcast can be done numerous ways. You can write us a review on Apple iTunes. Write us a review. I quite like 5 stars, but I will accept constructive criticism as long as that criticism is constructive. Another way you can support the show is by going to patreon.com. And we have some 200 and plus odd patrons, which is all rather lovely. And what they do is they contribute $2 per episode. And it's just a great way of showing your support for the podcast. We know not everybody has got money to spare, so it's not obligatory, but if you do have a little bit of spare money, you can support the podcast that way, because it means that we can develop things like Tractor that I talked about before.
So remember, to get in contact, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on the website or call 0203 031 3105 to leave a message.
And of course, folks, Twitter is at the nexus of most things dum-de-dum-esque. Now, Auntie Kerry, where can people find you on Twitter?
Oh, I am findable at Kerry Warbis, which is KerriWarbis.
How about you, Mr. Fickling?
At Pete Fickling.
Smashing. And you can find us collectively at dum-de-dum. And I've got to say a special big ups to Purple Pumpkin, Pat Brown and to Ambridge Pony Club, who, as we speak, are tweeting on behalf of the good ship Dum-de-Dum. And they took over the reins just yesterday. So you'll actually have some life coming from that.
They're account. Doing a cracking job.
They are indeed. Now, Facebook. Did mention Facebook earlier before. If you like Facebook, you're probably on Facebook. If you're not on Facebook, it's probably because you don't like Facebook. But if you are on Facebook, why don't you type in Dum-de-Dum and be part of the goings-on with Dum-de-Dum on said self-same social media platform. Big up to the Flick App Posse. This week on Sunday, we have another film club and we are analysing, enjoying, chewing the fat over the film Dig. It's one of the many reasons to go onto the Flick App and to partake in a little bit of Flick App action. New thread on the Flick App, Dum-de Mums. If you've got a mum that you love, and I think most of us have, and maybe if your mum has passed away, it's a lovely way just to memorialise your mum by taking a picture of your mum when she was all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and posting it to Dum-de Mums. My mum's on there. Phoebe Fagalili's mum's on there. Audrian Corubius' mum is on there. Why don't you go on to the Flick App, post a picture of your mum and memorialise her on Dum-de Mums on the Flick App. It's the end of the show, you pair. I do not know what piece of music we're going to play out to, so I'm throwing out the suggestion hat. Pete Fickling, what do you reckon?
Oh, Blue Monday, New Order, why not? Classic.
Ooh.
Oh, it's a banger, isn't it?
And just whilst we're here, Peter, you did say that the new Twitter team are doing a corking job, so much so that just flashed up on my phone as being the results from Ambridge Analytica, and the most prolific tweeters in the last 24 hours have been at Dum-de-Dum. So behind me are the strains of Manchester's Blue Order.
Let's have a new Monday.
Blue Order sounds like a Bernard Manning LP. Yeah.
A bit of blue for the dubs.
Blue, yeah.